This morning we're going to go through the book that is probably studied and taught less than any other book of the entire Bible. Number 66 out of 66, probably. Maybe even more than Leviticus, I don't know. But that's Song of Solomon. And written, of course, by Solomon. And the word songs in this application means canticles from Latin. And it is a writing of Solomon about his, we'll call his favorite bride, because that's certainly the way she is portrayed. But before we get into the book, we're going to look at a little bit of context surrounding this woman. Does anyone know what her name was? Be careful. No, we don't know what her name was. She's called Shulamite, but Shulamite is an epithet. Okay? It's a pet name that Solomon gave to her. Like you might have a pet name for your spouse. Well, that's what his name was for her. So we don't really know what her name was, but that's what he called her, so that's what we'll call her. So to get a little context, first let's turn to 1 Kings chapter 3, and we're going to look at just two or three verses there and give us some background on her and maybe why Solomon. And it appears to me that he rescued her, in a sense. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 1. Now Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter. Then he brought her to the city of David, Jerusalem, until he had finished building his own house in the house of the Lord and the wall all around Jerusalem. Okay, so she was an Egyptian. She was one of the many daughters of Pharaoh. All right, now look at chapter 4, 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 20 and 21. This tells us a little bit, this is talking about Solomon's great wealth. But what we're going to look at here is his borders of his kingdom. Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and rejoicing. So Solomon reigned over all kingdoms from the river, which is, I believe, the Euphrates River, way east of where he was living at the time, to the land of the Philistines, which would be to the Mediterranean on the west, and as far as the border of Egypt to the south. So his geographical area joined Egypt.
That took in all that Arabian desert.
Probably so. Probably, although there wouldn't have been hardly any people there, I don't think. Just on the northern edge. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now I lost my thought there, what I wanted to say. But in any case, what do you think one of the reasons, there were probably several, but what's one of the reasons that you think Solomon would have married this Egyptian woman? Huh?
To keep the peace.
To keep the peace. Absolutely. What's another reason? Yeah.
Not necessarily a deal of peace, but some sort of...
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. Yeah. Yeah, and I think because she was beautiful, and we're not told how they actually met. You know, we're not told if someone brought her to him, or if he was down in the land of Egypt. And what do we know about that? So what if he was in Egypt? He was not supposed to be. When God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, he said, you're not supposed to go back. I brought you out with a strong right arm and 430 years of bondage. Don't go back. Well, I don't know that we are told that Solomon specifically went back, but he not only married Pharaoh's daughter, he had trade with Pharaoh. He bought horses, chariots. Many places in the Old Testament we're told that Solomon traded with the Egyptians. And so he probably did cross over into Egypt.
I want to say something about that. Don't go back. We have several instances, though, where different ones did go back for various reasons.
Yeah.
Like Abraham.
Well, Abraham, that was before the time of the... Abraham went before they were slaves.
Yeah.
It was after Moses brought them out. Then they were not supposed to go back.
I guess the other one was Jesus.
Well, yeah. Yeah. True.
Is this Solomon's first wife?
No. Don't think so at all. And there's a specific verse about that. We'll get to that. What we do know also is that, and this is from the Song of Solomon, and we may see it, we may not, but I'll just go over it. She was an only daughter of her mother, but she had brothers. And her brothers apparently treated her roughly, or they didn't treat her as being special, or you can stay in the house. She had to work out in the vineyard, and she talks about in the first chapter, in the first chapter, about how she was dark because she was darker than her brothers, probably, because she was out in the sun a lot. Being an Egyptian, she probably would have been dark anyhow, a dark skin color. But she had to work outside, but she was a favorite of her mother. Solomon married her while he was building the temple, okay? And he started building the temple soon after he became king. How long did it take him to build the temple? Anybody remember? It's
seven,
that...
Seven years.
7 years. How long did it take him to build his own house?
Longer than that.
Yeah. Longer. 13 years. Took him 13 years. Now, here's an interesting thought. 1 Kings 9 and 16, and then we'll get into the study. 1 Kings 9 and 16. For whatever reason, Pharaoh came into the Canaan land and conquered and burnt the city of Gezer. Gezer, if you look, Gezer is between Jerusalem and the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, that's way north of the Egyptian border into Israel. Somebody read that if you got it there.
Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire, had killed the Canaanites who dwelt in the city, and had given it as a dowry to his daughter, Solomon's wife.
Okay. So that was his present. Was, I'll clean out this city for you, and then, I don't know if it's in, verse 17, where I think we're to understand from that Solomon rebuilt the city, and maybe that was a present. Maybe the rebuilding was where she was to live at some point in time. I don't know. We'll talk a little more about that. Okay. I just thought that was interesting because I had never caught that before, that Pharaoh did that.
Well, I'm thinking about this. He gave this burned city to his daughter for a dowry.
But he cleaned it out. I mean, that's what they did usually when they conquered a city. They killed all the people and burned it. And then Solomon, with all his great wealth, could have, rebuilt that city in no time flat. I mean, yeah, okay. I mean, that would be like us remodeling an apartment, probably, with all that Solomon had. Okay, to the book now, there's three speakers in the book. We've got Solomon, we've got his bride, the Shulamite, and then we have the daughters of Jerusalem. And I have a question here, and I don't really want to get into trying to answer it because I can't answer it, but it's something you might want to think about. Did Solomon actually write, did he write all of the book? Meaning, did he write what the Shulamites said and the daughters of Jerusalem said also? Or were they inspired by the Holy Spirit and their words recorded? Something to think about. It doesn't really matter in the long run, but it's something to think about. But this song, this story, is of a man and woman very much attracted to each other's physical beauty and obviously in love with each other. It can also be compared to the love of God for his creation of mankind, the love of God for the Hebrews, the children of Israel, and of Christ for his church. And that's, I mean, if you want to talk about that, we will, but that's pretty much all I was going to say about the comparison side of it. We'll go through it. We'll look at some of the things that are said. And, you know, if you have something you want to bring out on the comparison or something else, please do it. Okay, I want us to look at chapter 1 in more detail than the rest of the book, because it does give us a feel for the book and helps us understand the rest of it. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Okay, now, the Shulamite starts speaking here. Does most everybody's Bible have a little caption in there that says that? Or the bride or something like that?
The bride confesses her love.
Yeah, okay. Well, if it says that, then I'm not going to stop each time it changes. You can look at that. Verse 2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. Draw me away. So, in this, the very last statement there, I think, is the most important part of these few verses. She wants to be taken away from all the rest of the women. Now, what we need to remember is, Solomon had hundreds of women around him. Wives, concubines, and in one place it says virgins without number. Maybe these were young women waiting to see if Solomon would bring them into his harem. I don't know. I would think that's what it is. But they did not live with him day and night like we live with our wives and husbands. It wasn't anything like that. It's physically impossible. Solomon was the king. And if he wanted a wife or a concubine to come to stay with him for a certain period of time, he would call for her, and she would come. Or he might go where she was, but more likely she would be brought into the palace, to his private place, his private area. Okay? But this book is different. This woman had him in a trance, we might say. She had him all messed up. Okay, and in one place he even says, "Don't look at me. I can't stand for you to look at me, because I can't even think if you look at me." Okay, so this woman was different than all the rest of them, and she asked him here in verse 4, "Take me away." And then the daughters of Jerusalem say, "We'll run after you. We'll go too." Okay, the king has brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in you, these other women. We will remember your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. And here's where we get some information about her past. I am dark but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Solomon had dark curtains in the temple. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept. Hold on. Okay. Now she's speaking to Solomon. Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon, for why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions? She's wanting to get away with him and go somewhere private. Where can we go, Solomon? And he replies, "If you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents. I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold." Okay, verses 8 through 17, we have Solomon describing her beauty. And they both do this throughout the whole book. And to do that, they compare each other to objects around them, things that they know, things that they see, maybe animals, maybe. Well, we'll look at some different things. And, go ahead. Yeah. Well, I think that's one reason. Yeah, but you're saying what's the link between 1 Kings and Song of Solomon? Okay, I see what you're saying. Well, I think that's part of it. I think. That's a good question, Pete. I hadn't really thought about that a whole lot.
I couldn't understand the question.
Well, she was wondering, how do we know that this is Pharaoh's daughter that we read about in 1 Kings, since he had so many different wives? And, I mean, she was dark. Of course, that's not. I guess maybe an answer to that. Probably history gives us more information, maybe, than the scriptures right here. But that's a good thought. All right. Well, let's go on here. So he's describing her here in 8 through 10. And also 15 through 17. I want to make a comment on verse 12 through 14. Let's look at that. "While the king is at his table, my spikenard sends forth its fragrance. A bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me that lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blooms in the vineyards of En-Gedi." Okay, throughout the book, many references are made to perfume. Why do women wear perfume? Guys? Is it because they like the smell? They want to draw a man in, isn't it? And she talks about this many times. "My spikenard sends forth its fragrance." Okay? "A bundle of myrrh." Okay, what do we know about myrrh? I looked that up. What do you know off the top of your head about myrrh? Well, yeah, but that's an easy answer. What was it? It's rosin or sap from the various species of camphora trees. They were different trees of this species. And it was used as perfume. It was used as incense, which burns and puts off a pleasant odor. And it was used as medicine. What's the connection of myrrh and Jesus? We know that he was given myrrh as a present as a baby, but what else? Remember something else?
What they anointed him with, went to anoint him with, thinking his burial was.
I don't know about that, Matt. They used spices and very likely could have, but I was thinking of something else. At crucifixion, he was offered wine with myrrh to drink. Matthew calls it gall, but Mark in Mark 15:23 calls it wine mingled with myrrh. And it was a medicine. It was a painkiller, one of the uses. And Jesus wouldn't drink it. Remember, he tasted it or whatever, they put it up to him on a reed and he wouldn't drink it. So, but myrrh, as used here, is a fragrance. And they talk about this many times in this book.
So if it was used as a keyboard, it's probably a victim.
Could have been.
And so that's kind of her thing, saying, I'm putting this stuff on, trying to make you attractive to me.
Yeah. I want you to stay with me for the night and maybe the next day or two or whatever, because she knew, you know, her time was limited with him just because of who he was and who she was and all the other women. And I'll call them daughters of Jerusalem. And she was successful at that. All right, let's look at chapter 2 and verse 2. Here's Solomon. He says, like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. So if the Shulamite is a lily, who are the thorns? All the rest of the women, right? He's comparing her, how much more beautiful she is, or how much more he thinks of her at this period of time than all the rest of the women that are around her. And remember, these women would have been together, many of them. They probably were in different groups. But they didn't live separately. They lived together. Unless they had high elevated status, and some of them may have. Some of them may have been called queens, okay? They may have had, they may have been the favorites. They would have had much more status and possessions and favor than just somebody Solomon saw in a crowd and said, come with me. And he would do that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's look at chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, and then 17. Somebody please read 8 and 9, and then read 17.
Listen, my lover, look, here you come. Lead me across the mountain, towns of the hills. My lover is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. Just 8 and 9.
17. Yeah, 8 and 9 and 17.
17. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee, turn, my lover, and be like a gazelle or like a young stag on the rugged hills.
Okay. So Solomon was not some old, heavy-set man that couldn't get around, was he? She looked at him as a young, nimble, athletic man. And leaping and running. And she compares him to a deer. And then in verse 9, maybe he was spying on her. Maybe he was looking at her, and she probably enjoyed that, didn't she? Okay, that was part of the game here that was going on.
Looking back to see if you were looking back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, and I skipped over verses 10 through 13. He does take her away. My beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig puts forth her green figs, and the figs with the tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. So this is really poetic language of Solomon, and he's inspired, but obviously these are his feelings and his thoughts. And one of the other things that they, I think both of them, words that they use for each other is dove. They use the word, their eyes are like dove's eyes. Verse 14 there talks about a dove. Okay, in chapter 3, she apparently awakens in her sleep one night and cannot find Solomon, and goes to look for him. And then in verses 6 through 10, if someone would read that, she talks about him. She sees him, he is coming, and there's some interesting things that we find out about Solomon here. And also talks about the perfume again. Somebody Somebody read 6 through the rest of the chapter, please.
Who is this coming out from the wilderness, like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the merchants' fragrant powders? Behold, it is Solomon's coach, with 60 valiant men around it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has a sword on his thigh, because of fear in the night. Of the wood of Lebanon, Solomon the king made himself a
palanquin. I'll talk about it here in a minute.
Okay. He made it pillars of silver, its support of gold, its seat of purple, its interior paved with love. By the daughters of Jerusalem, go forth, O daughters of Zion, and see King Solomon with the crown, with which his mother crowned him, on the day of his wedding, the day of the gladness of his heart.
All right. So, whether this actually happened, or whether this is just figurative speech of her having this troubled night and seeing Solomon, finding him coming in any case, it's a description of him. And she uses the perfume, which is very pleasant. And how does he come? Verse 7, it's Solomon's couch, okay? He has 60 valiant men all around. So this gives me that, and I am sure that when Solomon, if he was out traveling, you know, they didn't have war then. There was no war during the entire reign of King Solomon. Every man dwelled under his own fig tree, and Israel was at peace, okay, the Bible tells us. But still yet, there were wicked, evil people. And if you went into strange different lands, you might not be recognized immediately, but Solomon would be, because he had many men, valiant warriors, surrounding him with swords. And then verse 9 and 10, this palanquin, I had no idea what that was just to look at the word, but you've seen in this time period, you've seen these, looks like a box carried on poles. And servants would put this up on their shoulders, and they would carry a king or a queen or some important person inside there. And it would have curtains over it so you couldn't see in unless they wanted to pull them where you could see them. And so that's a palanquin. And it says it's pillars of silver, support of gold, seat of purple, which of course was a royal color, and interior paved with love by the daughters of Jerusalem. Maybe he carried a woman around with him in it from time to time. I don't know. I don't know how big it was. But if it could carry one, it could probably easily carry two. And, I mean, Solomon could have men without number carry this thing, so the weight would not be a problem. And then I wonder about the last verse, if that's literal or not. You know, did Bathsheba actually crown Solomon when he became king? Or did she take the crown and crown him when he was married? I don't know. But obviously it's just some words about the crown. Okay, chapter 4, Solomon praises her beauty. I wanted to look at we probably don't have time here, but the first three verses would not be what a guy would want to say to a girl today. You young unmarried guys, if you see a girl you like, don't go to Solomon chapter 4 and start reading this to her and say, "You look like this," because she's probably going to smack you. Okay, if you tell her that her hair is like a flock of goats and her teeth look like a flock of shorn sheep, you know, that's not going to work. Now, verse 3 is not too bad. Your lips are like a strand of scarlet and your mouth is lovely, okay? And certainly don't say verse 4. That's the one I wanted to talk about. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory, on which hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men, okay? We don't talk that way, but then that was a huge compliment, okay? And here's the reason. These big cities had walls around them, right? And they had towers in these walls. What was the towers for?
Security.
Archers. That was where the soldiers could get, and they could, you know, they would be on. They would sometimes they would take shifts there. They basically would live there. They would eat and sleep and do their shift there on guard, and they could fight from there. Okay.
So sometimes, like ships of the Northmen used and stuff, they would hang their shields on it as being an example of all the shields and the strength and wealth.
Okay, that's exactly what I was getting to here. Okay. When the kings went out to battle and they conquered someone and they took the spoil, they'd take their shields, they'd take the trophies, okay? They would hang them on the towers of the city where everybody could see them. That was their trophy case. And Solomon says, your neck is like a trophy case to me. It's beautiful. These kings would look at these, they would look at these towers and just say, oh, wow, look what I did. Yeah, yeah. And you know what the pharaohs, you know, especially the pharaohs did, they found lots of reliefs carved into solid rock of their victories, you know, and they'll show scenes of war and how the kings took, control or conquered other kings. All right.
You're supposed to maybe on our necks and come a lot of
Yeah, and it does talk about that too in one or two places. Yeah, talks about, well, I think it's chapter 1, isn't it?
Where gold.
Neck with a chains of gold, chapter 10. Yeah. All right, we got to move on here. But just remember, guys, don't you don't necessarily want to use Song of Solomon if you're trying to get a date with a girl. Okay, you might find a couple of good verses there, but. All right, let's look at chapter 6, verses 8 and 9. This gives us some information about the women at this particular time. It says, there are 60 queens and 80 concubines and virgins without number. And my dove, my perfect one, is the only one of her mother, the favorite of the one who bore her. The daughters of Jerusalem saw her and called her blessed, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. So this may be a fairly accurate number of how many women Solomon had at this particular time. We know this was fairly early in his reign. So 60 queens, 80 concubines, and then all these virgins. But, were they all treated as wives? You know, who knows? I mean, obviously they were a sign of wealth and power. Any man that could have that many wives, whether he was intimate with them all or not, would not mean anything as far as an outward sign of power. They were there. They were his if he wanted them. Much different than today. And what are we to think of this, of how God viewed this? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we know he says multiple times the marriage is between one man and one woman.
Yeah.
And one woman is the focus of the whole book.
It is. And that would be a comparison for today, in different ways. Right. But they were married. You know, she was his bride. So, you know, it's kind of a puzzle, really, to me at least. And there's things we can draw from it. Chapter 7, Solomon describes her beauty, and she again wants him to take her away from the rest of them. Your head, verse 5, your head crowns you like Mount Carmel, and the hair of your head is like purple. A king is held captive by your tresses. Well, her hair wasn't purple, but what do we know about purple? It was the color of royalty. So her hair was beautiful. We can for sure say that. A king is held captive by your tresses. I was looking for the verse that says where he says, "Don't look at me," and I can't. I should have wrote it down.
Verse 6.
Of.
Oh.
No. What chapter? Yeah. Oh well. But in any case, any thoughts on why this book was included in the canon of the Bible? You know, it's.
Yeah, I think, I believe it was inspired. But
yeah.
I don't think God was mentioned in the book. Was the name of God in the book in
there? I don't believe that I.
Only Esther doesn't mention God.
Oh, okay.
Well. I don't remember reading that, Dwayne.
Well, I haven't seen it. I don't know. I haven't really been certain of the scene. Well,
after we hear the instructions of Jesus, this is all about one woman. And we're to love our wives as Christ loves
right.
the church.
Right.
Maybe this is an example of how we're supposed to.
Yeah. I think that's a comparison that can be made for sure. Yeah.
And I did find out about murder.
Okay. Myrrh and aloes, that's right. Yep, that's right. So we have at least three or four different instances myrrh is used in relation to Christ. Okay, we'll end our class then. Thanks for your thoughts. We'll have it. I'm not sure who the teacher is next week, but we'll go into Isaiah. Thank you.